Welcome back to Game Brain, a podcast about board games and our gaming group. In this episode, we are going to review the 2024 release, Let's Go to Japan, designed by Josh Wood, and discuss the other games we've been playing recently. Today, I am joined by someone I heart, Mr. Dmitry Portnoy.
Hello, everybody. I want to make sure this is a full review, not first impressions or intimations of. We're actually going to discuss it and recommend or not.
I also want to introduce someone who just won an iHeart Podcast Award, Mr. Ben Mandelker.
Hi, thank you. Yes, I'm sorry. I'm taken aback by Dimitri's like live on the scene reporter voice that he just like he's reporting from some car pileup on the 110 freeway. He's like, I am here. We are here. We're going to be doing a live review. But yes,
no stinking first impressions.
Thank you for having me, Trey, and it's great to see you.
As we are here in your office.
In my office.
In the Mandelker studio.
In the studio, yes.
Well, tell us about your podcast award.
It was, I couldn't believe it, first of all. So my other podcast, Watch for Crappens, it's a comedy podcast, but we focus through the lens of things on Bravo TV, like Real Housewives, Top Chef, things like that. And we've always kind of just been kind of like an outsider pop. I always viewed us as an outsider pop culture podcast. Like, we're not like hipster. We're not famous people. You know, we're not like, you know, we're just. So when we got nominated last year and we didn't win. I like did not expect to win whatsoever. And then this year we were nominated again. I was not expecting a second nomination. I thought last year was the one.
Right.
And then we got a nomination for Best Pop Culture Podcast, which I was like, oh, okay, cool. They're like, do you want to come down to South by Southwest for it? I was like, absolutely. If any chance for me to be around celebrities. And lo and behold, we actually won. I could not believe it. I mean, we were up against real famous people. So it was... I get really
you and Ronnie, your podcast partner, right?
Ronnie Karam and I, my podcast partner, my work husband, I like to call him. But like, we were really gobsmacked. It was truly a career highlight. That's probably the most exciting thing that's happened for me professionally. I've had a lot of things that seemed like they were about to like crest and explode and be amazing especially when I was working as a, you know, trying to make it as a writer in Hollywood. It always seemed like I was on the verge of so many exciting things. And I've had a lot of really great moments. But this is the first time I've ever really won.
You've made it.
Yeah.
Even though we're living here in the house that Crap built, aren't we?
We are in the house that Crap built. But like, I don't know. It felt really great to get recognition from like a major... you know, a major award for podcasts.
Because fans vote, right?
So this was not a fan vote. Fans vote on best podcasts. So of course, like Travis Kelce won that. So uh-huh. It's just an honor to be in the same ceremony as Travis Kelce. He was not there to accept, unfortunately.
Who's Travis Kelce?
He is a philosopher who specializes in the role of genders in medieval literature.
It's part of the Biden deep state.
I'm so embarrassed not to know. Ben, I subscribe to your podcast.
Thank you.
And it is my impression, correct me if I'm wrong, that you do 12 hours of original comedy every week.
It's not 12 hours. It sometimes can feel like that because we churn out a lot. Like we definitely churn out. I mean, there have been some weeks that have gotten close to that, actually. Like we churn out at least 5 episodes on our main feed and then another episode for our Patreon subscribers. But we usually get up to maybe 8 episodes. Then we do an Instagram live show. We do a lot of content. And then, you know, part of the year we go touring. So, yeah, we churn out a lot.
And it's all very funny.
Thank you.
Okay.
That sounded like a question.
I hope so.
And it's funny.
I want to make sure.
I hope so.
I want to make sure
And yet you have time for board games.
I need the board games. Mm-hmm. I need the board games. The board games are truly my release. Like I honestly, when I hang up the board game, sorry, the Crappens microphone, I need a release because to be able to like not have to be like trying basically doing improv for like hours at a time. That's what our show is like. You know, we watch these recaps. We watch these Bravo shows and we recap them, but we're coming up with jokes on the fly, like for an hour at a time. And it's exhausting because it, like, you have to be kind of at like a real extreme level of alertness.
Yeah.
So I love playing board games afterwards. To me, it's like a mental massage. I need to sit down with something really crunchy to sort of like massage my brain. You know, I sometimes just feel very dead after those recording sessions, especially if we do like three shows in a row.
Wow.
And, you know, we've been recording. There have been some days where we record for 6 hours and it's just like you spend 6 hours just trying to yes and someone, and like you need like a little Euro game afterwards.
So. Well, yes, and that massage you're referring to is real deep tissue, painful.
Ugh, the best.
Working out all the crystals of acid, lactic acid in the muscles.
The what it was, fascia?
Yeah. Yes, yeah.
I just wanted to recognize you for something that is truly significant.
Thank you.
On top of that, which was your epic Avalon win last night and how far you've come.
You know, now that I'm an award winner, now that I have a little trophy I can bandy about, I now took that new confidence and brought it into the world of Avalon. Thank you. Thank you so much.
No, but it's a game that took a while for you to get comfortable with.
Well,
and you had a successful Merlin last night.
I did. Well, it's not that I don't know if I'm still ever will be comfortable with it, but I have found over the past 3 months, maybe it's because Traders was on the air, but I have found
reality TV has helped you.
Maybe it has, but okay. I spend a lot of time on Crappens talking about the Traders, mm-hmm. and you know, we were recapping it every week and I weigh in every week about like, they should have done this. They should have done that. She should have said this. Phaedra could have done that. Trishelle did this. And I do kind of like come in with a renewed appetite for Avalon to kind of put those things to the test. And also I had an experience in December where I was just like fully read right away. And it was so quick and it was so deflating that I'm like, I kind of wanted to like, it made me want to be better at that game.
I want to put your Avalon win in context. You were Merlin and the three spies, myself included, Tom and Paul, have an opportunity to guess which of the other four players is Merlin.
Right.
We all guess different people.
Yes.
None of them was you.
Right.
So that was a remarkable win. You were invisible, and yet you managed to communicate flawlessly to everyone else.
Well, the most important part is that early in the game, Tom, who's very confident, wrote down on a post-it note, which is now his new thing, his self-assured choices for who was who. I think he said that Brian, he basically said Brian and Elder were Merlin and Percival or something like that. Either way, I was not on his post-it. And that to me was the true victory. That was better than any iHeart award.
No, but thank you.
I think you were right the first time. All right, so let's get into some games we've played recently. You want to start out?
Sure.
Ben?
Let's see.
Or things that are on your brain?
Things that are on my brain. Oh, I'll tell you one thing that's on my brain that's like very recent as of about 2 days ago, which is that Baseball Highlights is back on crowdfunding. It's on GameFound.
Yeah, you were showing this to me last night.
I was.
It's an app and it's a board game?
Well, the app is
laughable.
The app is like, you know, it's something like a middle schooler would make these days. Okay. No offense to the developers. I'm sure you put in a lot of effort, but it is 2024 now. So it's time to update that, I think. Like, again, not to be too snarky, but honestly, you know, you want to get people into your game. So like,
But it looked like what it quickly simulates a baseball game through actually a fairly limited number of card plays. Right?
Yes. So, okay. So Baseball Highlights 2045 came out, I think in 2014. Is Ralph Anderson the designer of it, I believe? I could look it up on my computer, but, you know, now that I'm coasting off of my win in Avalon, I just have people do things for me. But but it was from Eagle Griffin, and it's a card game, basically. A card battler, maybe you could even say. It simulates
two-player,
even though it says four-player, and even the original box even said potentially three-player, but I think that three-player variant has been scuttled or whatever, cast off. So basically, it's essentially a two-player game, And one person is one team, another person is another team. And you have, I believe, a deck of maybe 15 cards. You start with like rookies and veterans. That's what your team looks like. Just generic rookies and veterans. And you play cards against each other. And what's interesting is that every card that you play is a, it's both an, it's like an offense and defense at the same time. Mm-hmm. Meaning that when you play a card, you're saying, okay, I have someone at bat, and this person, if they are not defended, is going to score a triple. And then you, Trey, would play
a fielder card.
You play a card that would have a power on it that says cancel a hit.
Okay.
Or reduce a hit by one base, maybe something like that.
Okay.
And then your card would also say that you're going to put someone on home plate that is going to threaten a single. So what happens is that your card defends me, and then I resolve my part of it. It's like, okay, Trey either canceled my hit or my triple was turned to a single. So I move a little person on a baseball diamond to first base, let's say.
Right.
And then we go back to your card. And then now we go to, like, here's right. your
so we're hitter. We're not playing out nine innings with three outs and balls and strikes. Rather, it's compressing it all into a – and is it like I play, you play?
Yeah, it's a really strange rhythm, and that's, like, the biggest – that's the hardest part for people to get used to. It's not like I play my card and we resolve all of my card. It's like I play my card, and then you play a card and resolve the first part of your card, and then we go back to me and see how my card, like, has been affected by your card. I resolve that, and then we go back to your card and finish resolving it, at which point I play a card to try to respond to the card that you played, and then we see how my card responded, then we go back to your card. It's like a really strange rhythm, but once you get it, it's not hard to pick up. It's just alien to a lot of people. And once you pick it up, it really does a surprisingly strong job of simulating the feeling, the emotional arcs of a baseball game. So anyway, I got this game.
So who have you been playing this with?
That's a great question.
Have we come to the point
Travis
here?
Kelce. I brought us the okay, iHeart Awards.
Travis Kelce, right.
to the video presentation.
Travis's brother has plenty of free time now.
That's true.
Oh, suddenly you know who we're talking about.
Look at Dimitri. He's a Swiftie through and through.
I just didn't want to. No, I'll go back to my persona now. Thank you so much. I'm back in my cocoon.
I will say, I used to play this with my friend Brendan every now and then. James, who's come to a game night. I haven't played it in a few years, but it's great.
You said there's something new. They're doing a new version.
It just came out on GameFound, a new big box.
Okay, gotcha.
Which is sort of like it looks like it's a normal size box, but it's a new box.
A new release
that has all the expansions. Plus, there's going to be I think two new expansions, and then you can get player mats or whatever. It's also very affordable. This is not a Kickstarter where you're paying now $120 for a fancier, larger, chunkier version of Baseball Highlights. Like, I think I only needed two of the expansions, because I have quietly been supporting this game in the sense that I have several expansions for this game. And it's shocking. I don't even like baseball, but it's a good game. And so I think I only had to throw like $12 at this game found. So it's very affordable. I really, for people who enjoy like a good two-player thing, that's like, if you're like me and you never got the Magic the Gathering bug, you never got into any of these LCGs and CCGs and BCGs or whatever they are that are coming through, like, it's a really
it's finite. You can open the box, finite. Everybody has the same cards.
It's very fun. It's also very thematic. It's really fun because as you play these little baseball games, at the end of the baseball game, the players that you have used have kind of like a value, and then you use that value to recruit new baseball players. And the baseball players all have names and they all have things. And so you actually get used to the other player's team, which I imagine is what happens with other card battlers, right? And so you start to anticipate, like, oh God, they have that slugger that I have to be prepared that if that slugger comes up, I need to save this defender in case that slugger comes up. And you start to really get to know their team, and it feels like you are playing baseball and you know the other team's big players.
You want to know who's gonna be on your roster.
There's a lot of really fun subtleties. I think it's a blast, and it's coming up on 10 years. I feel like this is kind of like a 10-year anniversary.
I did go down the Magic Gathering rabbit hole when it was first released.
Yeah,
that's how long ago that was. And David Gillison and I were friends at that time, and we both got into it and kind of bought in right at the launch. I didn't continue playing past like 6 months or something like that. But like that was
how much money did you save?
Well, I ended up like that was the thing about CCGs.
How much magic did you gather?
I gathered probably like just like a box of boosters or something like that. But then I ended up making money. Like if you got in early, I mean, these games are all pyramid schemes. So if you get in early, then the cards have value and you can resell them. And I'm starting to actually kind of like go down a similar rabbit. I'm resisting the gravity of the collectible card game Black Hole, because this week was the release, or last weekend was the release of a new CCG from Fantasy Flight Games called Star Wars Unlimited, which is not exactly game brain material, although I know Jordan is interested.
Gillison and Paul played.
I think it's totally game brain material. I mean, it's not my cup of tea necessarily. Yeah. I also haven't played it. Maybe it would be.
It's a good game from what I've seen so far. I've played a bunch of games online against AI. I bought the starter set. I got the pre-release set, and so the big decision now is: hey, am I really going to play this thing? And you know, spend $400 or $500 right now on cards, thinking, oh, I can always sell them at the end, which is what I did with Magic. Right. And I should hate this game. I'm just like looking at it now, like I swore no more CCGs. I'm not going to do it. So much of the game is about like, oh, the 15th card in the booster, that's a foil. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there's three different slots in the pack where you have a chance of getting a hyperspace edge on it, you know, so like there's rarity in terms of just from the collector point of view. So this is like Pokemon.
Yeah.
Where, like, I wish I understood less of what you were saying, but than you actually do. And we will edit out that whole pyramid scheme thing, right?
What are you talking about?
Well,
I think we need to come up with a CCG for Dimitri where it's like the theme is not Star Wars or Magic, but it's like
Boyfriends of Taylor Swift.
Oh, that, or I was going to say Dostoevsky. Or just like philosophers, like it's like Bacon and Kant and Nietzsche or something like that. And you can trade with them in battle. You can have philosophy battles.
Bacon is more of a scientist.
Okay, I apologize.
I mean, that's okay.
Okay.
I have found that these Fantasy Flight card games have been historically pretty good. In fact, very good. The issue has actually been that they committed to an LCG model, which meant it's not collectible card games in that you're opening packs and getting random rares and legendaries and this type of thing, which is what Magic the Gathering is. Instead, you could essentially buy into the entire card pool. So it was more like a subscription to the cards, where they would do a new release every 6 weeks and you'd spend your $12 and you'd stay current on the card pool and you could make anything you want. You start playing Star Wars, you're going to get certain cards that are better than others, and you start to build around the good cards that you have. Maybe you trade away cards you're not using for others.
Right.
And the thing is, it's like those games that they made work good. It's just that those don't make the kind of money that the Magic Gatherings of the world are. So it'll be very interesting to see whether Star Wars Unlimited here can get the, you know, and I'm seeing a lot of people that I know that play card games get into it right now. And will that have, you know, the collective gravity to make this game sustainable? Because their LCG model, which I think they've abandoned, was not financially sustainable. And so they abandoned it. And so is that the cynical thing? It's like, no, we have to do CCGs because that's the only way we can make money to keep enough money to keep these games going.
Is Lorcana, is that CCG?
Absolutely. And that's the Disney based
one. I feel like we haven't really talked about that at all on this. And it's a thing.
It's definitely a thing. And there's plenty of people that are our age that play Lorcana, but I do think it was geared towards a slightly younger audience. And same with like Pokemon's a serious game.
Right.
It's both, you know, kids collect it, but you also can play it as a game too. And I think Lorcana is doing pretty well. So like CCGs are back.
Right.
And you kind of can't ignore them because without CCGs, this industry might have gone away.
Right.
I mean, it was Magic the Gathering that kept the brick and mortar hobby stores, game stores open for over a decade.
Probably still now.
Yeah, but they got big enough that they could just buy TSR. You know, they could buy D&D at some point and keep that going. So, you know, Wizards of the Coast, that's Magic. You know, and that became, you know, Hasbro owned them or whatever, but like it's been the cornerstone moneymaker that's kept the industry going for a long time. We're past that now.
Right.
But it's still like if you talk to the owner of a store, Magic is still their core business, and so much of their activities are structured around it. And so this could, the Star Wars Unlimited could be a new big entry into that space.
Well, it's interesting that you were saying, you're like, I'm not sure this is game brain material or not, because one thing that I've been having a lot of fun with every week on our Instagram is I like to put together kind of like a, it's like, what would be the five games that we're most, that if we could play them, we'd be most excited to get to the table this weekend. So what I do is I send out a text usually at the end of the week, and I text everyone and I say, what would be the five games you would like want to get to the table? It's kind of nebulous. Is this the game that's on the brain? Is it a game you'd be excited to play? Yada, yada. And it's kind of like everyone can interpret it the way they want to. But honestly, this week, the vibe of the of our top five was like a little, it was more in that, like, for lack of a better word, it's sort of like a fanboy space. I don't know if that's the right word for it.
You used that last night, so just maybe expand on that, why you think.
And I'm not saying that in a pejorative way or whatever, but like the number one game that our group collectively was most excited about was Netrunner.
Right.
And also in there we had Dune War for Arrakis, which is not the same, but it's like, it's still Dune.
Yeah.
And then we also had in there, Star Wars Unlimited was just on the cusp. So that didn't make the top five, but it like was just there. I think that like Avalon, courtesy of Dimitri, Dimitri and Paul pushed Avalon up into that list and sent Star Wars.
And now you will too.
But was it number one?
Now that you're an expert level.
Netrunner. So Netrunner, but like, you know, there's been excitement about Netrunner, Star Wars Unlimited.
So maybe let me finish Dune. That thought there. Like Netrunner was early Fantasy Flight LCG, meaning limited.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a lot of people's favorite game of all time, but it failed financially for Fantasy Flight ultimately. They discontinued it, as they have all their LCGs, including a Star Wars LCG. And what's interesting is that the fan base has been able to continue going with Netrunner and has kept the community going. They're now printing their own cards. They've completely, as of this summer, Matt's really the right one to ask about this, but as of this summer, they will have completely replaced the card base so that you're not playing with Fantasy Flight cards anymore. It's a completely fan-run game and community. And that's very interesting. And I think there is interest among game brainers to start playing this again. I know Matt's very interested in, like, I went and played a couple of games with him this week just to say, well, if you're thinking about Star Wars Unlimited, maybe we should be playing Netrunner because we know how good that is.
Every week, there's been enthusiasm for it with my little polling here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think last week it was like not on the list for whatever reason, but it came roaring back this week. And so when I say fanboy, it's not to be pejorative. I can't think of a better word,
but
when I
think of like geek stuff culture, that is popular culture,
pop culture, geek culture. When I think of people who go to Comic-Con,
yeah,
you know, like sort of like there's certain games, like if you're like a Steffenfeld head, I don't associate with you with someone who maybe is necessarily going to Comic-Con. Of course you can, if you're
right.
But yeah, like, I think of that as like a Gen Con kind of, not Gen Con, Essen or whatever. I'm trying to, it is that kind of like pop culture, you know, nerdy in the best possible way kind of vibe. And I feel like we're having a moment like that with the titles that people seem to be gravitating towards right now.
I grew up with RPG culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember that being a gateway to geekdom for me. In college, after high school, that got replaced with video games that, in my opinion, have a different threshold. RPGs, you can play RPGs with somebody else buying the materials. D&D and others, you know, can sell books, can sell adventures. But you don't, as a participant, you don't have to buy them.
Right.
The person running the table has to buy them and you can pitch in. But with video games and with card-based games, you have to spend a lot of money. So yes, it's a bigger profit for the makers, but it's less. It's an entryway that requires like an economic spend that a lot of people don't have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, just to bring it all the way back to baseball highlights, I think one thing that I always found was tricky with baseball highlights. So, by the way, you know, I think it's great. I love it.
Cool.
But one thing that's really tricky is to, that sort of, this is full circle here, is that baseball baseball and like a card battler, those are two things that don't always, I think, in people's imaginations go together necessarily. Mm-hmm. I think when people think of like Lorcana, Star Wars, you know, Magic the Gathering, Flesh, what's the one that Candace and Jordan really are? Flesh and Bone, Flesh and Blood. Keyforge, like all these sort of kind of things that live in the world of like sci-fi.
Hearthstone is Hearthstone. What Blizzard did digitally.
People, you know, like, so baseball doesn't feel like a natural fit. So it's funny because it's called Baseball Highlights 2045 because you can play as, there are some cards are humans, some are robots, some are cyborgs. I think that's like an attempt to kind of like get into that space. And it's functional. Like there are cards that are, have a certain, you know, effect if you play against a robot, for instance. But I have found personally that one thing that has been hard for me is that like, if I say does someone want to play Baseball Highlights with me? The idea of I found that a lot of people are not excited about the idea about playing a baseball card game.
Yeah. And the robot thing also, like, that gave me pause.
It's weird. Say.
And if, is your point that, like, if something has Dune on the front of it, if it has Star Wars on the front of it, you have a little bit of momentum that gets people over the hump into, like, oh, well, I know that, like, I like Star Wars. I will be familiar with Luke and Darth Vader.
Yeah.
So I already kind of know this world. I know what a TIE fighter is, maybe.
Exactly.
You know, and a lightsaber. So, like, I'm ready. It makes a bit more sense.
And there's a little bit of that in Baseball Highlights. Like, the designer, when you start getting out of, like, your rookies and your veterans, start getting the custom cards, a lot of the baseball players' names are the first name of someone and the last name of someone. So you might have someone like Doc Strawberry or something, which I don't know if that's an actual card. So like for people who follow baseball, they're
you're
like
showing your Mets fandom there.
Can you tell I'm from New York? I was raised in the 80s. But they're like, so those are Easter eggs for baseball fans. But I guess this is just my way of saying that if someone says you want to play Baseball Highlights, be open to it. Right. And I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing. When I say I have found that I've not really been into these card battler games, but I really enjoy Baseball Highlights, that means that either like maybe I'm speaking to people who are similar to me, or maybe the people who like the like card battlers, they're hearing like maybe this isn't for me. I don't know. But I think it's a super fun game, and I'm really excited that it's, you know, it's coming back to.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if that is a gate. Like, is that a gateway at all for you into this other stuff? Because I think, like, I like these kind of card games. Clearly, Jordan does. David is always focused on card games. Maybe Candace too. But I've played enough games with David where I'm like, David, given a choice, will play a card game.
Mm.
Like, card games are where he's centered. So, you know, we do have kind of like that corner of game brain that's always ready to play those kind of games.
I don't know. It hasn't been a gateway for me, and I've had it for like 8 years. But I haven't also, part of me wonders if I play it like enough, will it cause the needle to move? It's basically the only card games like it that I played are, not like it, but I have that and I've got Star Realms. Those are my only two.
Right, I have that. I've never played it. I always heard it was
Star
so
Realms
good.
Is fun. It's really fun. I played it on the app a lot.
I meant to play it.
So.
All right, so we had a game day over at Matt's last weekend. I saw twice you guys played Gnar, Dimitri?
Yes, with a K. I'm just going to give an impression. I really liked it. It has a 1.8 weight on BGG, which...
What's the elevator pitch for Gnar? Tell people what that game is.
Oh, that's the remarkable thing about it. You think you're playing a Viking Conquest game. And it encourages you to think that it's a blow builder and you can conquer distant lands and get helpers and for your ship. But it's not. It's a trading game. It's a trading game where you can build a tableau, get from your teammates from your shipmates various things, increase your reputation and increase your wealth. It's a clever design that for me comments on games of conquest and games of war as much as it comments on how we play them.
How does it comment on them?
I mistook it for a war game. I mistook it for a game of conquest. And then once I realized what it was actually doing, it taught me a lesson about perception. It taught me a lesson about how certain game mechanisms are not necessarily married to a martial theme. It's actually a game of peace and an interesting game of peace that way.
Trading. When I just walked up to the table, this game has really excellent table presence.
It's beautiful.
It is a tableau builder, whether it's like a war game or not, but it's definitely a tableau builder because you've got these beautiful cards of illustrated Vikings, male and female, as well as like the ocean I'm seeing. Plus you're like building halls or things that are.
Yes. You're contacting other lands, other islands and other nations. And then you can trade with them. And when you trade with them and you align them well and properly and time it, you can maximize what you get through that trade. It's a game of timing.
Mm-hmm.
And the key is when you build a tableau of similar cards and you lay a new card down on that tableau, you can get all the rewards from that tableau at the same time. So the more lands you open, the more helpers of the same type you have, the more you can maximize them, the more you can, a bad word, exploit them, but literally profit from it.
And it can play up to four people.
We played it with four.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it can play fewer.
I'm seeing the weight here is 1.88, which is pretty low.
It's remarkably low for a game that actually uses a lot of mechanisms, I think, in an interesting way. Again, it's a replacement for, I forget the name of the game that it's a replacement for.
It's already been replaced.
Yes.
Successfully replaced, ladies and gentlemen.
It has been replaced to oblivion.
Splendor? I want to say it's Azul, but it's not Azul. It's something else. It's on the website, and David Gillison actually mentioned it.
So it's not an actual re-release. You're just saying once you've played this, you're not going to play.
This is a great gateway game, and it's very enjoyable. It's mildly interactive.
It replaces Splendor.
Thank you so much. Yes, that's the one. David said that after playing it. I don't know if he was quoting or that was his original.
I've heard people saying it replaces Splendor.
Because like the theme in Splendor is about as thin as it comes.
I think it's vibrant and lush.
Do you really? I'm going to collect red gems so that I'll have more red gems to spend when I buy other kinds of gems, usually red gems.
This is more thematic.
Okay, that's good.
You know, and again, it's bar, a delight. And it also comes with rule-breaking random powers that you can agree to at the beginning of the game. It's a lot of delightful game that can teach all sorts of things.
Great.
But also on game day, it was my first game of Marrakesh. I felt like you've talked a lot about like when you've missed a game, through the window. And I think I just got in at the end of the window here, right?
No, let me tell you something. My Marrakesh window is wide open because I mean, every time I play that game, I just love it. I'm just ready to play.
You've been a real advocate for this.
Yeah, I
think
it.
Like you love it so much, you almost like grab me and like, Trey, I know you don't like Steffenfeld games. I think you will like this one.
Yeah. I was really excited to teach it to you because I know you were saying that you felt the window was closing. First of all, I love when I can play a game with someone and reassure them that the window has stayed open for them.
And you wish others would do the same too.
Well, as you did for me with the White Castle, by the way. Right. You did do that. I'm a little worried that the Nucleum window is closed because I've only played it once two-player and I want to play more of it.
Do we have Nucleum stands in the group? I'm not sure. Matt's a stand for a lot of things.
Yeah, but
who's fighting really to get it on the table right now? Elder was a little bit
fun. Elder's a stan. I think I'll just arrange something with Matt and Elder. It'll be fine. Okay. I'm actually not concerned. I know I'll be able to play.
But you haven't played Nucleum.
I played it once, two-player, but I haven't got the full thing.
Gotcha.
Anyway, this is not about Nucleum. This is about
Marrakesh.
Marrakesh, what was your impression, Trey?
Yeah, I would love to know what you thought.
I thought, you know, it's so visually overwhelming when you first look at it. But I found I was really having a good time. It was had a game with a, like a lot of little frustrations that actually like turn into actual opportunities where things that feel bad at the time actually like, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's, so I think it immediately was in the conversation for my favorite Steffenfeld game. And I would say like, I generally don't love his game. I always appreciate them. Like, obviously this is a highly competent, intelligent designer who's also willing to try interesting things. Like, I still think it's so interesting that he made a game like Merlin, which is like a roll and move game, which we would, like, I would say, please don't make any roll to move game, roll and move games.
Some people love that game though, by the way. I've never played it.
But he like tackled it. I'm going to make a roll and move game that, you know, that actually has interesting, you know, Euro style decisions. I still don't think it completely worked, but like, I admire him so much for doing it. Anyway, of his games, I think Castles of Burgundy stands well above the others for me. I would now put this in that category of the two games that I would actually want to play that he's done, because I've too often to me, his games feel like there's a section over here, there's a section over there. And like, these are actual different games. And sometimes you don't even engage with part of them. Looking at Marrakesh, you might think that's exactly the same thing here, because the game is this color coded different regions of the board that do different things. And you're making decisions about where you go. That said, it was all integrated in a way that somehow addressed my problems with it. Yeah.
Yeah. I've been so shocked by how much I've loved it, because when the initial videos came out saying like, this is what this game's all about, I was like, I don't really get it. And I can't believe that I keep on playing and having these like just really like just deeply rewarding experiences with it.
For me, this is a game that is really worth getting in its upgraded version. I played it 3 times. I played the base version and then the upgraded version, and it made a big difference for me. I think that's part of the color overwhelming thing that you might be talking about, Trey. But having the actual like pieces and not having to substitute them for
cardboard
chit makes a big difference, and having actually multi-layer or
so is this. This is the Camels and Nomads expansion.
Well, we haven't played with. So
I'm just not talking about the expansion right now. I'm talking about the
actual components. Expensive, but we played with the little expansion, right? The top board.
We played with a little module. So okay. So for people who may be confused, there are Queen Games has released all these Steffenfeld City Collection games.
Right.
They come with a deluxe version where the box sort of has like a, it'll say the name, it'll be like a dark, maybe like a dark brown. And those have like very fancy components. And then there is the classic version, which is, I think, basically the same, just doesn't have that nice sleeve. But I could be wrong. But I think it's pretty much the same. And then there's the essential version, which is like the, if the other ones were at a $125 price point, the essential maybe at like $85 or something like that. I don't know. I don't remember. And so the essential is supposed to be the quote unquote more affordable one. And the pros for Marrakesh is that the essential version is a square box that matches all the other boxes in the series, which is nice.
Okay.
And that's why I backed it. And the cons are that there's like a million little pegs in this game. And in the essential version, almost all of them are sort of like replicated as cardboard chits. And you have to do this thing where you are, when you receive a wooden peg, you often have to exchange it for the cardboard version.
And that kind of mars the experience. So it kind of mars Marrakesh-y
I personally don't have a problem with it, but I
played with the nice version.
You play with the nice version where when you get a peg, you just get it and you put it on your board.
Right.
Which is nicer. It is nicer. I'm okay with a cardboard exchange situation, but I totally get it if people are really annoyed by that.
I wasn't really annoyed, but I found myself preferring the deluxe version. And I usually don't care.
In retrospect, I would have gotten the deluxe version, but I'm not going to get it now. I have the essential. Anyway,
we will be talking about deluxe editions when we get to our review of Let's Go to Japan later on.
But my question is this about Marrakesh for you, which is that one of my concerns, I thought like maybe the things that you might not like, Trey, are that you there's like a luxury goods market that you can buy stuff from. And there's powers that you can you know, buy, or you can claim. And I was like, would you be, were you going to be frustrated by the flop of these things that like, oh, you are, you need to collect necklaces, for instance, and then there's no necklaces available. So you buy a dagger and that reveals a necklace and the next person can get it. Like, was that, I was concerned that would annoy you.
I have one play, so I don't know. He's actually talking about the strategy, which I got a little,
it worked out
early
you,
on. I got a reward that said, hey, if you collect necklaces, they're going to be worth 6 points more for each one. There were two necklaces on the board right at that time. So I'm like, and I don't even know how many's in the game. So I was like, okay, this seems like it was a real, for a first game, I'm like, that seems like a very simple strategy that I can pursue. And it ended up being good for second. In fact, I thought I was going to win,
right?
But I did not.
I had, like,
you played
had
the master.
I had, I saw the Matrix. I did this crazy thing. I mean, I had the highest score that I've ever had. And there, I don't know. Like, I just was, I was able to see something happened at the end of that game where
you saw the Matrix.
I saw the Matrix. I saw everything. And it really worked out. It really worked out.
You won convincingly.
Yeah, out of nowhere. But I was.
I was telling you at the end of the night, I was feeling like, oh, this was a really good game day. I played three games. I won three times. I was like, oh, wait. I didn't win the first game at all. Ben won the first game. It felt like I won the first game.
I was that teacher that then demolished my students, and I felt a little bad afterwards.
Well done. Don't let the Wookiee win.
I'm just really glad you liked it, because I think it's just so, so fun.
It was cool. It took longer than we thought, but that may have been
It took a long time because there was a lot of AP going on. And quite frankly, I think if you're playing this game and if you know you are AP prone, you really have to think about your turn ahead of time and look at the tiles ahead of time. Don't wait until it's your turn, because honestly, when it gets to your turn, after there's this draft and everything, and you've placed your workers where you want your workers to go, you should have a pretty good idea of what you want to do. I say that as someone who gets AP in the game. I have AP, but like if you are someone who really
struggles. There's some meaty choices.
Yeah.
I found usually I was, because you pre-program your moves before you drop the pegs into the tower.
Yeah.
So you should have a fairly good idea of what you're trying to do on your turn. And I found that about three out of four times I was ready to go when it got to my turn. And then about a quarter of the time, the previous move had changed things enough that I had to reconsider. And that's kind of a nice balance.
And there's a chance that if you program your turn and the wrong Keshis fall out or somebody else gets the Keshis before you do, you won't get to take that turn.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Or get a severely suboptimal version of that turn.
But
so there is a chance calculation. There is an odds calculation that you need to do to really excel. And if you're aware of that, if you're conscious of it, that can really stump you.
But that's what's so fun about the game, too, is that like so many times something doesn't work out, but it really causes you to sort of do something in a different direction that winds up being so much more fortuitous than you even anticipated, which is a real delight. And honestly, I think a real testament to the game was, I mean, the AP was horrendous. On this game, horrendous. I was losing my mind. I was actually getting mad, and I was getting sharp at the table. And
you wanted to play another game.
I had a game that was supposed to start at 2 p.m. and we didn't finish till we were 2 hours behind.
Yeah,
and that really bothered me. But that being said, I love I still had so much fun. Like that, this game can withstand crushing soul. Killing AP, and I can still look back and say that was fun.
Murder, but yeah. I still had a nice time.
Yeah.
All right, I would like to get to the Let's Go to Japan review. Is there any one last game that you wanted to mention that you've played this last week before we get to it?
Let's get to the review.
Okay.
You okay?
Yeah, I was going to ask Dimitri what he thought about Cusco, but we don't have to do that. We can move.
Personally, I'll just be quick. I liked Cusco. For me, Cusco is a more me game than Marrakesh because it's more difficult. It feels more like a struggle. It feels more evil. And that kind of forward, you're going to have a terrible time. I can live with Age of Steam or Brass. I'm okay with that. As long as everyone is suffering, I'm okay with my suffering.
What's the elevator pitch for Cusco?
The elevator. Oh, well, it has a very natural theme. The elevator pitch is that we're in Cusco. We're in the Incan Empire, and we are runners running between towns to deliver messages. And as such, we are doing things like putting feathers in our mask and collecting farmers and academics and putting them in our mask. Natural. It makes sense, right?
You putting what does that mean? Putting
it's a
them Stephen in your mask.
Fels game, so it doesn't really make
sense. So here's what it really means is that it's essentially a dice drafting game. There's like five or six actions. You roll your three dice like you would Castles of Burgundy.
Okay.
And you put your die out on the action that you want to take. Every die that goes down has to be less than the value wise, less than what's already there, which means that if someone puts down a one, no one else can take that action. But the twist is that the action, you get usually a better result from the action with a higher value die. So if you put down a high die, you are getting a better action, but you're also
so you have interesting
open
decisions
for everyone
about
else.
What die.
And it is remarkably stressful game. So the game that Dimitri and I played, we played with Tom and with friend of the podcast, Chris Bussey. And people have said that Cusco, which is a reimplementation of Bora Bora by Stefan Feld, people have said it can be a cutthroat game. And it does feel cutthroat. But I really learned what cutthroat meant in that game. It was...
From Chris Bussey?
Chris and Tom.
I'm sorry, I jumped in before you were going to say what I'm going to say. So go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, the game... I mean, this was actually... I'm saying this in a way that I want everyone to know this was actually... It was like the best version of cutthroat to me, which is that it was like... I mean, I was like rattled after the game, but then looking back, I was like, that's kind of amazing. I was that emotionally like charged from it, like this Euro game by the end. I mean, I was like literally a bundle of nerves because it was so intense. And but what was funny, were you going to talk about what Tom was saying at the
listen,
top?
Listen, Tom, it's not Chris, it's not Tom, but they kind of catalyzed each other.
They did.
And they built it into a fearsome opponent slash we're gonna mow everything
it was so
down that path.
You have it was like it felt like every move that you made, you're like, okay, if I put this die down here, what repercussions will there be? But the best was when the game started, Tom was very salty about his you get these like missions. They're called missions. They're kind of like contracts. Like at the end of the round, have these things. And if not, then go screw yourself. And so...
Sounds great.
So he started with three missions that he was like, well, I mean, I can't even... Okay, well, I'm starting in fourth in turn order. And
this game
never played
is
this
crap.
Before, and now I've got three missions that I actually can't even do, and there's no compensation for me. Okay, just wanted to clarify, there's no compensation.
I thought he was saying that about Marrakesh, or...
Well, he did that too.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, all right.
No. This is his strategy. So a tactic.
Turn order seemed pretty balanced in Marrakesh, by the way.
He was clearly unhappy. And later on, he said he was in character. He said, because several times he said, I just want to remind you. So this game is supposed to be first. So the person who's played this game the least is going to have the missions that are least advantageous to him. Just want to clarify that.
By the way, that was my first time playing it too.
Yes.
I think it was Chris's first time playing it as well.
So I
just want to point out that Tom claims to be in character when he's most Tom.
He was the most Tom. He was not in character, but he was making a fuss over the fact that he was already at a
massive
disadvantage.
That's a character. Making a fuss is a Tom character.
It is. Yeah. But one thing that happens in this game is if you have a perfect record of doing all of your missions, you get bonus points at the end of the game. So knowing that he wasn't going to be able to do his mission the first round, he was feeling cheated. And that, by the way, that is a very valid feeling because you're like, oh, I'm in fourth turn order and now I'm in a situation.
Right.
I'm already not even eligible. I'm already eliminated from an entire endgame scoring
category.
He was
in his feelings.
So he didn't really like Marrakesh that much. I think he was preparing for Marrakesh part two. And I was like, Tom, listen, people play this game. You don't have to do all your missions. That's just one category. You can compensate somewhere else. Ugh. Well, guess what? He won the game. Okay?
Yeah. He must be a genius to have overcome such a, you know,
he played an
deficit.
Excellent,
at
he played
the
an excellent game. It was very exciting, very intense game. And Dimitri, you fared well.
Well, here's the thing. I had difficulty interpreting edge rules in Dimitri's hieroglyphics. I would
that's a part of your character as well.
I would rather have a rule explained in English, and when things are explained with little symbols.
I was going to strangle Dimitri. I was going to strangle Dimitri because there's this one thing where you can push a thing down, and if you push it down, you can get either turn order or you can get or corn. And but in a different phase of the game, you can use that tile for something else. And Dimitri, every single round, kept on getting it in reverse. And he was like, what does it do? I was like, I wanted to reach across the table, Dimitri, and put my hands around your neck because it was already so intense. And then I was like, just get it right, Dimitri. Ben,
I wish I could say I was doing it on purpose. I was not.
I know.
I wish I could say my whole meta game for the evening was drive Ben crazy.
I was.
It wasn't.
I was literally losing my mind because I was.
Your face has turned red here, by the way. Like your memory of this, your ears have turned red and your face is flushed.
So embarrassing.
This memory.
You know, I lose face. I feel like I'm a character. I feel like I'm a Chow Yun Fat character in a Hong Kong movie. That my whole goal is like not to, maintain my honor, and I keep losing it.
So by the way, the running theme.
Speaking of honor,
I'm about to say the running theme of these two Steffenfeld stories is that I lost my shit twice.
Nice.
In two different games.
So Paul was happy had he been there.
Yeah, but it all worked out because we went to a diner afterwards and I had a grilled cheese and we shared onion rings and it was all water under the Cusco Bridge. I hope.
And it was raining.
I hope. And it was raining.
It was raining.
And a lady lost
because it's about the friends we make.
And a lady
along
lost
the way.
Her balloon and made a scene at the diner.
All right, so let's talk about Let's Go to Japan. And I'm sorry if I'm seeming anxious. I've been eager to... this game finally arrived. It was kickstarted. It arrived this week. I got a collector's edition. We'll talk about that maybe in a second. But you open it up, and it's this gift. It's a kerchief wrap. Your board game is wrapped in a custom silky... I don't think it's silk. Silky scarf that arrives. But I had a chance to play this game a few months ago. Josh Wood is an LA-based game designer. He's in the playtest group that I used to belong here. So I
think the fabric is Cupro.
Thank you for that. I played this at a playtest day, testing day, and had immediately loved it. So I was eager to see. I backed it. Eager to see whether it was as good as I had remembered. So let me give you the pitch of Let's Go to Japan. This is a medium to light card drafting game in which each player kind of plans and then goes on a trip to Japan, taking trains back and forth between Tokyo and Kyoto over 6 days. So I think this game is kind of a fun forward game.
Thank you, Paul.
The actual, well, that's more your, that's Ben's.
That was a me.
Catchphrase. Here are the steps.
Oh, so I credit to the wrong person.
It plays 1 to 5. I'm not sure I'd want to play at 5, but you could. Mm-hmm. We played it at 4. It has a playtime of 40 to 60. That's about right. It could go, I'm saying you don't need to rush it. If it goes longer, that's probably actually better. The rare game where longer might be better, where you're not rushing at all. We played some second games where we rushed, and that wasn't as enjoyable. And this has got a weight of 2.2. It's from Josh Wood. The publisher is AEG. All right, so why do I love this game so much? And I was very eager for you to play it, Ben. I thought you would really like this game.
I'm happy to report I did not want to strangle anyone during this game, which was a nice improvement from Marrakesh and Cusco. I did like this game. I saw this game on when it was crowdfunding, and I almost backed it. But then I had this moment where I thought, you know, I'm going to get this game and it's going to be nice. But like, what's going to happen is it's going to be one of these games where like, what I'll really want to do is play a heavy game. And then my friends will come over and want to play this game instead of the heavy game I want to teach them. And I was like, you know what? Let me just not put myself in that position.
Right.
But I kind of regret it now. I actually really regret it because as soon as we started playing it, I was like, how do I buy this game?
Yeah, because I would say, like, you probably have friends that you would want to play this with that you may not want to play some heavier stuff
right.
with. Like, people that are at the edge of the hobby more.
That they can visit the world. I have found that they can visit heavy games. But in recent years, I almost feel like after the pandemic, they are more like, let's have something a little bit lighter and just more like fun forward. It's not so much about a huge rules download. It's more about like, let's play a game where we can joke and laugh and you know, interesting decisions. But
yeah, this game has a really strong narrative element. I think like one of the things that I loved about it, for one thing, like 75% of the game is planning your trip.
Yeah.
You're not going on the trip. Going on the trip is actually the scoring phase mm-hmm. thing. What you're actually doing in most of the game is planning your trip. So I think this game kind of best compares to something like Seven Wonders, where you're looking at cards and then passing, mm-hmm. you know, every round. And it kind of has that similar thing where you're, unlike a lot of card games where you have a hand of cards and you're saving certain things for later, in this game, every single round is either something like you're looking at two cards, you're going to play one to your tableau and you're going to pass the other, and then you're carrying nothing over. Although there's other rounds where you're looking at four, you're going to play two and pass two.
It successfully narrows your decision space.
Mm-hmm.
So the decisions that you're making are not about selecting what card to play, but really where to place it and how to build, I think, a tableau. Mm-hmm. Your trip yeah. is like a tableau where cards can both longitudinally matter as days, as later days you begin to accumulate experiences and you can take advantage of that with various cards and also add up on individual days. So it's a tableau where the vertical elements and the horizontal elements you have to consider. And that's, for me personally, an interesting puzzle.
That's plenty yes. of decision space.
And right there, yeah. Yes.
I would love to clarify for people who are listening that basically you have a board in front of you that's like a calendar.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a weekly calendar. It goes from Monday to Saturday. So it's Monday to
Tuesday.
That's your trip. And you're going to be deciding, what are the things I'm going to do on each day? And so these cards that you guys are talking about, there's this card draft. The cards represent activities.
Yeah, or events.
Events. Yeah. And you take a card and you put it under the day that you want to do something with. And each day can have really three activities, but you can wind up getting a bonus fourth activity. And so you are just, as you get these cards, you are literally filling up the days of the week with activities. But of course, it's more than that because the activities, it is a tableau. Activities, all the cards have little symbols on them that represent, like, this was a food-based activity, and this was an activity that was about a unique experience, and this was a shopping activity. And so, like, how you arrange those symbols on your calendar and the order in which
it
all matters. And so it's not just like, oh, I'm making a fun itinerary. There is like a puzzle to, you're creating your own puzzle, which what's fun about that is that it mirrors the real life experience of building an itinerary to go on a trip.
That's right. And that's before you even kind of get to the thing that I think makes this game really well married to the going to Japan part. Like, I think this is probably going to become a series for Josh and AEG. I would think if it's a hit, I think this game has potential.
I think it will
be
a hit.
I think this game has potential for being a big hit that kind of expands the board game artist. And I wouldn't surprise me at all to see some.
It's a system.
Let's go to France.
This will be in Target.
Let's go to Italy.
This will be in Target. It'll be in Barnes & Noble.
Absolutely.
It'll be everywhere.
It's that kind of game that has a mass market appeal. I think the thing that makes this so suited to Japan is that the cards that we're pulling from are actually either Kyoto cards or Tokyo cards.
Mm-hmm.
And this mirrors the way a lot of people travel to Japan, where you hit these two major cities and you take the bullet train between them. And so if you plan your trip well, maybe you're flying into Kyoto and then take the bullet train to Tokyo and you fly out of that. Or maybe you go to Tokyo for two and a half days, then come back and you do your round trip out of Kyoto. Or maybe you're taking a lot of trains, Dimitri, mm-hmm. where you're jumping back and forth all the time and you're spending more time on trains than actually seeing stuff. Not to pick on you, but like, that's a thing that can happen where you suddenly like,
Dimitri had a very inefficient itinerary at times.
I love planning my trips to New York, and I love taking the subway. And in New York, I often take the subway when I don't have to because it's very efficient. I made a mistake. I made a mistake because instead of using the points that I accumulated during individual days to buy enjoyable fast train tickets, I used those points to take walks, and hoping that the walks would lead me to interesting places, and I gambled and I lost.
The walks mechanism that Dimitri is referencing is, I think, one of the things that's very cool about this game. Like I think I just said, like 75% of it is planning your journey, and then 25% is scoring. But that scoring actually has some decisions in it. And one of the things you can do is, if you don't like a card, you can essentially like take a walk. You know, you can say, I'm going to leave this block of this day unplanned and I'm going to go for a walk. And until I get there, I don't know what I'm going to see.
Yeah.
And then I can decide, do I want to go take that drumming class that I just walked past right now? Or do I want just like, I'll just stay on my walk and I will be refreshed, because this game ends up being, it's a point salad. But there's a lot of the points come from a lot of different ways that you're kind of calculating. But some of it is like, are you happy? Mm-hmm. Are you exhausted? You experience stress in this game. Like you can experience physical stress from having to do like long walks. Or sometimes the walks are refreshing, or it can be financial. If you get an expensive sushi dinner, or you stay in a really nice hotel.
Or stay at the Capsule Hotel, which is very refreshing for me.
Which is fun, because if you do accumulate stress, or if you spend a lot of money and make decisions that make you feel worse or reduce your resources, there are cards that will let you earn experience and points off of that.
That's right. Some of the relaxation activities don't really get triggered unless you've done stressful things that you need to relieve.
But like,
that's right.
But as you do stressful things, if you overstress yourself, you could start to accrue some negative endgame points. But also, if you do some really lovely relaxation, you can get a lot of positive endgame points, which is just a great thematic touch that, like, at the end of this game, when you look back at your trip, you can say, oh, this was actually I was so happy during this trip. Or like Trey, when we played, you kept on tipping over into the negative space. And it was funny. It was like, oh, I was like, Trey, you may have had a better trip than me, but I have nothing to complain about. But you clearly had an issue. Like there was a pox on your trip. That's a fun thematic thing to do, to say.
It's an interesting puzzle. It's almost impossible to look at it purely mechanically. You're so invited and so pushed into telling a story and theming it in your head and putting yourself into that space and into that position. That boundary doesn't exist.
Well, that's what that scoring segment, the last quarter of the game, actually is. We're recording the score, but the way you actually play this game is that you actually narrate your trip at the end. You go through the events from the time you arrive in Japan, and the first thing you do is this, and you're explaining why you did it, and you got a nice walk because you're recovering from jet lag. You end up narrating the entire trip, so it feels to everyone else at the table, and you're putting color on that. It's a chance to kind of role play or whatever and talk about your trip, or like where it went south or where it was really great.
Right.
You got to do a thing. So the actual scoring engages in role play in a way that I haven't seen in other games.
That's really, in fact, with us, we got so into the role playing that the role playing, like the scoring, actually took longer than the game, because we spent so much time talking about the trips. And there's like funny little crinkles. Like I was on mine, I was just going through it, and you guys all started laughing because I was sort of paying attention, but I was like, yes. So I was at the Capsule Hotel, and then I went for a walk, and I wound up getting some sushi. And then what did I say? I said something like I was so happy, I was so energized for my sushi that I went to a vending machine, and you guys all cracked up. Like this was because I was saying it, like I wasn't, for some reason I was like more reading off my cards at that moment, and I realized I had teed it up as if like I had gone to this amazing landmark, and it was just I went to a vending machine. I was like, then I went to a vending machine,
and I got some photo stickers. You would like, spend a lot amazing. Of time in capsule.
I kept on going.
You had a lot of Instagram moments at Capsule Hotels. But a lot of times also we were looking at certain people's tableaus, and it's like, oh, well, you know, so and so is actually having the vacation that Dimitri wants,
right?
Because
it was Drew the first time
because at the end of the game, often they actually you're actually accumulating these different experiences in these different categories, so you come back and you can say this was a fantastic foodie trip,
right?
For example, and you can score, it's, you know, it's a point salad, you can score a ton of points by having this great food trip, and then it's like, I really didn't get around to visiting those shrines, so, but right. other people did, you know. It's so you, it really does reflect that, like, different people have different types of experiences when they go on vacation.
Perfectly legitimate way of playing the game, that that you just plan the vacation that you would want and see how it
scores.
If the cards let you.
But I think, like, something that's, we're sort of skirting around this a little bit, which is that, like, the theme in this game is just so strong, and all the, what's really great is that all the playing cards that we are using, they are all fairly specific. I mean, there are some duplicates that sort of have different powers on them, but it's the same theme on them. But these are relatively specific cards about temples that you go to, real life places, experiences, and they all have like a little blurb on them. So there actually is an ability to be educational about it. So if Trey just handed me one, this is Nishiki Market. So what happens is the anatomy of the card is at the top. There's some symbols that use for scoring. Then it says Nishiki Market. And then there's a drawing in this case of a fish with like a lime wedge, or it might actually be a yuzu koshu. And then it says Nishiki, and it has pronunciation, which is great. So Nishiki Market is a 5-block area with over 100 shops and restaurants specializing in fresh food, cookware, and local cuisine. So it's great just to learn these little nuggets of information.
And yeah, like terraforming Mars,
but it's true.
Yeah, Wingspan, I think, is the better example.
Right. Or right. Arc Nova.
But this is actually a little bit more than what's on the Wingspan cards. The Wingspan cards do have some interesting stuff. Yeah. When I play Wingspan with some friends, we a lot of times will read out loud the tidbits about the birds as we play them. But also what's fun is that you can use this, you can incorporate this into your storytelling. Like, right. Oh, well, I went to the Nishiki Market and it was this 100 shops. It was great, but then I was so tired, so I had to go to the capsule hotel afterwards. You know, that's great.
Yeah, it gives you the tools you need in order to kind of properly narrate and roleplay it out. These cards are gorgeous.
Yeah.
I found I had a lot of affection for, like, you kind of, you own your trip.
Yeah.
In a way that I, like, a few games do that. Agricola does that for me, of like, you own your farm.
Right.
You've kind of like accomplished something where you look at your trip, or you didn't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I would say, like, after I played this the first time, like, yes, you have this whole scoring phase, but in truth, like, the scoring doesn't really matter. It's mm-hmm. nice when you kind of hit your little bennies
right.
as you go along, but it does completely succeed that, like, the journey, appropriately, of going on this trip provides so much kind of like joy.
Yeah.
Like, who actually finished first or third, fourth? Yeah. I don't think especially matters at all.
It doesn't, but I will say that I have, apparently, in the history of your copy of the game, I've had the two single best days of all time.
You've had the peak days.
I've had no one, as of today, no one has had a better day in Japan than I have. I really killed it. And my best day of all time, it all led up to a tremendous day where I went to a cat cafe and let a cat nap on me. And I'm telling you, I just blew it up. That was a day. Like, that was
your 26-point day?
That was my 26-point day. But the way the scoring works...
It was actually 28, I think.
No, it was 26. I said 28 by accident.
Oh, okay.
But it's interesting. The way that the scoring works reminds me of a card game called Point Salad. Have you ever played that game?
No, I know what it. Yeah, I know what it is though.
But it's a game where there's like all these cards flying through, and each card has its own sort of scoring on it, where it's like collect like this many. Have two for every carrot, you get this many points. For every pepper, every set of pepper and tomato, you get this many points. And that's what all these cards are like. You sort of, every one of them has a scoring condition on them that relates to the experiences that you've had. Those experiences are abstracted in symbols. And it's all about deciding, okay, of this flurry of scoring
options,
opportunities,
yeah,
which are going to be the six that I choose for the game. And that's
you're kind of referring to like the highlight of the day, because every single day you have a single event at the end of the day that kind of defines the day. And this is a contract, essentially, of like, if you have met these certain prerequisites, you will get some scoring. And sometimes it can really take off if you're if you really specialized in food or whatever, and you know, plus one for every cat you petted or something like that. So there can be some pretty crunchy ordering that's going on in the game. But as Dimitri was saying earlier, your decision space is often very limited. So I don't feel like you're ever like ground to a halt. And even if you do be like, I don't feel like I have any good options, that's where the things like taking a walk come into play. They have some options for like, you could do research and you can look at more cards and blah, blah, blah. But it's fine for you just to be like, you know what? I'm going to take a walk this day. And sometimes that walk really works out well.
Let me tell you something. I had such a good walk last night. I walked into a park. It was wonderful. I think the game is actually a little crunchier than it would appear. Mm-hmm. There were definitely
but
turns.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't bring you to a stop.
It does. I mean, there was a moment. There were a few turns last night where I was sort of just like, oh, I want to do this and I want to do this, but I have to do this. I put this here, not there, then that, but then I have to discard this one. And you know, there is sequencing, and I was really happy that it gave me crunch because I really like crunch. And I was delighted.
That's good, right? I was not expecting it. It's not as light and fluffy as you feared, but it's still fun forward. Go ahead.
Yeah.
I want to contrast this game with Station Fall.
Oh.
Okay. Station Fall is a very, very, very crunchy version of what should be a fun forward game with random and malicious and take back elements that anyone can enjoy. It's an interesting theme, but to play it, you have to master a bunch of mechanisms.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot.
And the goal of Station Fall is a fun forward game for serious gamers. If we're not challenged, then we can't enjoy it. And sometimes that's true.
I don't know if it's for sure. I mean, I feel like the goal of Station Fall is that through all these wacky levers that we're pulling, we wind up telling a totally deranged story about the space station. and seeing that story take shape is the joy of it for me.
I like it.
In my one play of it.
I played it 3 times. I liked it a lot, even though I was taught by... Well, never mind. I like it a lot. Let's go to Japan. For me, is a Bizarro World version of that concept, an opposite version of that concept, where there are mechanisms to challenge a serious gamer, but it's really, you don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
You, in order to play the game, all you have to do is just embrace the theme, and the game makes it really easy to embrace the theme. So the complexity is hidden. The complexity is polished, and different people can play it at different levels. People with different experiences in gaming can play it at different levels together, and it can serve as a unifying group game, as an introductory game, as an Avalon style beginning of the night game to get everyone up to speed.
I think something that I want to like build off of that with is, as you were saying that, something I was thinking about was that this game is unique in that I think the way I approached it last night was, you know, I want to have a good trip, but I'm looking at the scoring conditions and I'm trying to sequence everything so that I can win. And then once I've set up all my scoring, we now look back and see what was the trip that I actually took. But this is a game that you could play where you say, let me look at the trip I want to take and let's all not focus on the scoring conditions and let's just play these cards. And I want to have, this seems like an itinerary I would want to take. And now that we played these cards, let's see how it actually stacks up. Like, is this an actually good trip? Like, you could weirdly invert this game where you're not thinking about maximizing these scores. You're just saying, like, this is a trip I'd like to take. And it's kind of like when you do, like, fantasy football and you do your draft and then you get a grade from Yahoo that's like, C-, why are you playing this system? You know, it's kind of like, if you look at it as more like a grade, that could be a really fascinating experience. I don't know if that's what you're saying, Dimitri, but it's definitely what popped into my mind as you were saying your POV.
That is exactly what I'm saying, except stated much better. But if you're playing Station Fall, different people cannot play Station Fall at different levels. They're going to get in each other's way. They're going to ruin your game without realizing it. Everyone at Station Fall has to play at the same level. It has to be the agreement, even though the ultimate result
it's more
is
adversarial.
Chaos.
Mm-hmm. Like our one play of Station Fall, you duped me very successfully in a way that's still
I was an engineer, and I was establishing that someday I was going to be a very good Merlin.
That's what I wanted the game to be, is just like an Avalon with some extra layers in depth. That's what I was hoping.
The spirit of the game, though. But again, you're the master player, Ben. You're the master player, Trey, and you. It's a lot of effort and a lot of mechanism to collaborate on a nonsensical, chaotic experience. This game is the opposite. You can have people playing completely randomly if they want to, and it'll still be fun for everyone.
Right.
Even if there's a 3-year-old child, if she can't line up the cards. You can't really read it.
But it's supposed to be 10 and up. Game is 10 and up.
So you're being okay. You're pushing a child in prematurely, but that's fine.
As long as you can read, as long as you can.
You could. Yeah, I know what you're saying. I really enjoy that special rare breed of a game where the mechanics engender a huge amount of storytelling on their own without a lot of fussiness. You could make an argument that Station Fall has a lot of fussiness to get to that story. Mm. There was, but I still enjoyed the story. Sure. I did enjoy Station Fall that one time, but I've also not been totally drawn back to play it again. But this isn't about Station Fall. I think games like this, this game, Station Fall, Dead of Winter for me falls in that category. There are a few other games where you look back and this is the story. Hegemony can do that. I think Hegemony often does that. But there's so much going on with Hegemony that usually people are not always talking about that at the end of the game. But this game really is about, to me, the high point of this game is just the storytelling that you get out of it. And to that effect, one thing that did surprise me, the storytelling does take a long time. And it was really fun.
Yeah.
It was really fun.
But you don't want to rush it.
You don't want to rush it. But the thing that I found when we played, we did two back-to-back games.
Yeah.
And
don't
I found,
do that.
Don't do that.
Right.
Because there's a lot of magic in this game. And it's like, what do they say about magic? Is that once is magic, twice is education or something like that.
Right.
You should never repeat a magic trick.
Never repeat ever, a magic ever, trick. Ever. Right. And so, or at least, so I think do it. But if you do it a second time, I found the second game of the night, the game part of it was all good. But when we got to the storytelling, people were not.
Yeah, we kind of rushed through.
People weren't paying attention the same way. It was people were, they'd heard that card before.
Yeah.
People just kind of wanted to get to their points.
Yeah, I'm not sure this game has 20 plays in it for me, unless it's spread out. But I'm also I'm really excited to play this game with a bunch of different people that I don't normally play games with. I think one impression I had, Matt called this game overproduced, and he's not wrong. I also found there's an attention to detail here that's really nice. The components are nice. They're well thought out. The rule book is well written. Mm-hmm. It has a lot of really nice details, like the way we keep score is in a travel journal.
The graphics are really nice.
Yeah.
The iconography.
You can struggle sometimes with the iconography in games. I don't think you struggled here.
But you know what, though? There was one aspect that was a bit of a challenge sometimes, was that sometimes with the drafting, at midway through you draft to the left for most of the game.
About halfway.
Yeah. Then you switch, go to the right. And then it's sort of around that pivot point, there were little traffic jams of cars going the wrong way.
Yes.
It was, I did it, you did it, I think Brian did it.
Can be a little and it can fit. There's a round tracker that tells you what you do on this round.
And it's really,
so it's not just the same thing every time. They mix it up, yeah. But it, you can kind of get ahead of yourself sometimes.
It's like, where's the cars?
You're passing left. We're passing right now or something.
And then
like
when
that.
You do the thing, you can turn in a token to draw three cards from the top of the deck to get more variability. And then you can like discard down. And like tracking the cards sometimes could get convoluted. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how you fix that, but that was
a card shoe.
A card shoe.
Yes. Like those things you
No, that's
you
not helpful at all.
Blackjack table.
I know what you're talking about. Sometimes you look over and Dimitri has eight cards in his hand. It's like, yes. How is it possible you have eight cards in your hand?
I was like, and a tile from Cusco. What is going on? How did he get that in there? But
right, that could be a little confusing.
And I'm clutching on cashies.
Yes.
Thinking they're nuts.
I think I had to teach this almost from the rule book the first time I actually got my copy because I'd only played it at a demo day with Josh one time. I think I'm kind of getting up to speed on how to teach it. And the more I taught it, I think I would be more inclined just to get people to start playing it.
I don't think you have to even go through.
I've been over teaching it almost.
I wouldn't go through the whole thing about like the cards. I think you can let people discover which way the cards are going as the round comes up.
The game is simple enough that you can probably. Because
that's probably overwhelming. But I think the game is.
Because once you start playing it, you kind of I see how this is going to work. Yeah.
You could actually theoretically for the learning game just. Like, you could do the Dimitri style and say, you know what, everyone, don't worry too much about how this works. We're just going to draft cards and you put together the trip that you want. And then you have the trip and then you're like, okay, now we're going to score your trip. And now through the scoring of that trip, they now will learn how the scoring works, potentially. You could theoretically do that.
And then they'll want to play again and then we'll be violating our two-game rule.
You're right, we can't do it.
So it's tough. It's one of those things of like, how much do you need to just get going with this? And I think I feel like I've probably been on the side of over-explaining a little too much rather than just getting into it.
You did a great job, though.
Would be fine. It's not hard. It's not that weighty. But it, like in the end, though, you looked and like what the teach was. It took a little, for the amount of time we actually played the game, it was a little much.
Right. I have to say, I do think this is going to be a hit. I love that it's set in Japan. What I'm looking forward to is I would love a version of this game that was a little bit more satirical. Like, I would love a version that takes place in Los Angeles and you have, like, instead of Tokyo and Kyoto, you have the west side with everything west of the 405 and everything east of the 405.
With the traffic expansion?
It's like traffic instead of bullet trains, and you know you're going to cultural things, but you're doing things like getting your Botox, you're auditioning for a commercial, you have to go see your personal trainer, so that way when you go through the story and like it sounds like I'm joking, I'm really not, because when you go through your itinerary in let's go to Japan, it's very lovely. It's very, very lovely, and it's so delightful and so nice, and then these random things that happen that are very funny. But I can't help but feel like, God, it would be a real riot if, like, you know, it's like, okay, so my Tuesday, I started up at a commercial audition, and then I had to do a shift at this restaurant, and then I had to go to Santa Monica to, you know, walk some dogs for an A-list act. So you're actually not only telling a story of your day in Los Angeles, instead of being like Monday through Saturday, it's actually from like 9 a.m. to like 10 p.m. or something.
Sure.
You're actually sort of like giving a detail like what your life is like. I don't know. I think that would be
good. I can see that version. I mean, it's notable that Josh's previous game is Santa Monica.
Yeah.
He knows. But, yeah. But I think, right, I think you look at this format and say, oh, with minor changes, significant, but like what's the thing that makes L.A., defines L.A. might be the traffic.
Right.
You know.
And you could put in like real things. Like I decided to go to the Getty Center, or I decided to go on a tour of Paramount Studios. But like I think by weaving in kind of like actual sightseeing with idiosyncratic lifestyle things that happen out here, like, oh, I had to go to
the
like,
cards
a sweat lodge.
Do not indulge in any humor. I'm not saying that the game is humorless, but rather it's like it's created this space where the players can then bring in the humor. There's no intention. Like there's no – like you're talking about with the baseball game where like, oh, here's Doc Strawberry.
Right.
It doesn't do any of that to kind of suggest that what they're doing is
– Which is correct, and that's how it should be, because I think if you don't want – in my pitch for the LA game, it's not like supposed to be wink, wink, and like it's like a silly person. It's like very earnest, like – you're going to go to a spa, you're going to Botox, and then let the juxtaposition of all these events together create the comedy.
You tell the story. The yeah. player tells the story. And that's why I wanted to jump in and say, I disagree. Visiting a government building and then a TV tower in Japan
is comedy.
Is comedy.
I went on, so we didn't really mention this, but every day of the week is ideally themed. Like on every Tuesday, we're all going to do something pertaining to nature. And on Thursday, we're all going to do something.
Well, it rewards you for programming certain things.
Right. Like you don't have to, but like if you do food stuff on Thursday, you're going to get bonuses. And there was one day that like there's a spiritual day, right? We're doing spiritual activities, and
temple, I went visiting temple. Shrines and
yeah, and I went to the government building on the spiritual day. Like that is hilarious. That way, like yes. And those moments were so great, and you sort of want more of them. And I also know that like when you try to get more of them, you're kind of like ruin it. But I loved those moments.
Yeah, I think it's like it's one of those games also that. If you actually like stuck the landing perfectly, I'm not sure the game would be great. I think like when things start to break down a little bit, that's actually where it's like at its best. It's fun when you've got this crate, like what is this doing here in the middle of like, this day?
Dimitri on his trip, he took a bullet train to Kyoto to pick up like a sticker.
He went to a photo sticker,
and then he went back to Tokyo.
Yes. I had a visit to a bullet train museum that awarded me for taking at least three train trips. So I had a stressful trip
going to get a sticker. In
you spent two thirds of the day at a monkey park.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. I can see Mike doing that. I can see Mike walking over like, oh, look there. This is a monkey. It's just nice. I like that. You've seen a monkey before. It's just sort of getting so carrots and going to feed it something. It's nice. It's a nice monkey.
By the way, I don't think I can be the person to say this definitively, but this game doesn't insult Japan or Japanese culture, I don't think, in any way. I think
it feels respectful.
Yes, it actually reflects the fun that you could have there.
Lens is on like people visiting Japan,
right?
Yes,
right.
Yes.
Like we are visitors in this space. Is the framing?
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
which is smart.
Yeah, like Dimitri says, you know, we are three white men, and we're not Japanese, and we don't, you know, so it's hard to say. You're like, oh, like this feels like a very respectful treatment of the culture. It seems like it to us. It felt like there was an emphasis in trying to be educational and to open our eyes to what there is to explore in Japan. It definitely made me want to go to Japan also, mm-hmm. which I already did want to go to Japan. But
well, I can't want to go to Japan any more than I already do. But yeah. It didn't make me want to go less.
But maybe it made me want to go and have some Japanese food. It made me want to, you know, like... you know, indulge in Japanese culture, which I think is great. And especially if this could be, you know, it's funny talking about Stefan Feld and the City Collection. Like
this is a city collection.
This is actually the ambassador to these cities. The Stefan Feld is just like, they put a city on and you know, I don't play Marrakesh and say, oh no, I want to go to Marrakesh. But like these games, I'm saying these games as if it's already greenlit for more, but if they, you could have a Marrakesh version of this game. And I'm sure I would want to go to Morocco after it.
It's like Monopoly. You can have a version of this game mm-hmm. for a ton of locations and a ton of even fictional locations. You can have a border versus what's the city of men? Minas Tirith versus
spaced out
border kind of.
But you could totally have fictional. You could totally make a Star Wars Hobbiton version of this. Brave. You could do like this could be licensed to death. Like this could be
and
Disney.
We want to see.
Let's go to Mount Doom.
We want this. Well,
I'm actually this is something that like has a Disney license written all over it. Right? You go to the theme parks. You go to Disneyland versus California Adventure.
When do you walk across?
I mean, you literally walk across
or Minneapolis St. Paul.
Hyper local and I'm into it, but I still, by the way, I'm still going to advocate for the Los Angeles one because I think like there is a way to do LA that would be absolutely, and you could probably do New York City in the same way.
We love LA.
We love
New York, right?
Absolutely.
We want to play this game in cities we know well and we adore. And see how it stacks up and see what we can do with our days.
And like, it's funny because the lens is like visiting a place you've never been to, but there is something funny about, like, you know, visiting places that we're from and seeing all the, like, if I saw someone and they said, okay, well, I've set up my itinerary, so I'm starting off, I'm gonna have coffee in Los Feliz, and then after that I'm gonna go to a library in Westwood, and then after that I'm gonna go to Pasadena, do some shopping, I'd be like, oh my god, let me, you know, you, oh, like, yeah, people who live here, you would be rolling, because it's like, oh my god, like, what? No, you would never do that. Just the logistics of that is horrific, but like, that's where so much of the comedy would come from. Mm-hmm. I just want an LA game. Josh Wood, if you're listening, please, just,
you should make it.
I would be so hashtag blessed to collaborate and be like, just, I will come in, like, let me come make two LA decks.
Manhattan, Brooklyn?
Manhattan, Brooklyn would be great, but I just don't
West
know them
side,
as well.
East
but like
side,
LA, I feel, LA? Listen, I used to be an Uber driver, so I know this city. I know this city through and through. I'm going to pull my Uber card right now. I'm going to pull my iHeart cred. I'm like, I won an award. I want an award. Please let me do this with you, Josh.
All right, people are getting their Kickstarters right now. I don't think you can get it in the stores yet. You can pre-order it. I'm seeing here on Miniature Market, you can pre-order it for $40. I think it has an MSRP of $50, which is...
It's going to be everywhere. I'm telling
you
right now.
It's not going to be one of the more expensive boxes, I think. But
I'm telling you, you're going to find this at Barnes & Noble. You're going to find this in... You'll find it... You will find it... You might even find it in a museum shops. You know, it will be everywhere.
Yeah, I wonder, like, can this become, I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but like, I would put this in a game of like a potential gateway game for expanding the hobby in the future. I could see playing this with my relatives at Thanksgiving.
People who, you know, play Wingspan, me included, I have Wingspan and two expansions.
Later, much later than Wingspan.
But like, if people are comfortable playing Wingspan, there are tags in Wingspan. This game, I think there are, you have to deal with tags. Mm-hmm. And you have to like count up how many tags you have, and
but if you're tracking it.
You track it. I think it's very accessible, but like, I think if you can handle Wingspan, you definitely can handle this game.
All right. Well, thank you.
I enjoyed it.
Gentlemen, I think we all recommend this game.
I do.
Be curious to see at the end of the year if this makes a best of list. It's almost in a different category from some of the heavier stuff we would look at. But I have no reservations about recommending this game.
Yeah, I would be if we're doing a top five, I would be surprised if this makes it into my top five, just because I know the sort of games that I like really like, my heart sings for. But I can see the best part for me is I can really see who I would play this with. I can envision groups of people. I can envision inviting people over and having a really delightful time. And mm-hmm. so I'm excited about this game. I mean, I said to you, when I don't know why I'm like yelling at you right now. I said this to you. I said like you were teaching it. You were teaching. I said I need to buy this game.
Yeah, you were at a different table when you said that, right?
No, I was no, but last. Oh well, yes. Actually, you're right.
You said that on Saturday.
I said that. Yeah, whenever it was when we played it, but also last night when we were playing it, as you were going through the rules, and I was looking at the cards, and I was looking at those beautiful porcelain bowls, which was, I think, the overproduction you're talking about. Yeah. I was like, yeah, I need to buy this game.
I had a similar thing where, like, there's sometimes where we play games and, like, I may end up really loving this game. Like, right now, I kind of haven't decided I need to, like, sit with it a bit. This was not the case. I think I got this game, started playing, and immediately I was like, oh, this is really cool. No, I like this. This is really good.
Have you played Santa Monica? I've never played it.
I haven't. I was looking at it, you know, kind of in preparation for this episode, and I might want to go back.
Right?
I think it's more like you're laying out tiles on the like the beachfront.
The cards,
you know, like there's sand and beachfront attractions, and you're placing different buildings along the line. I don't know it well enough to actually speak to it, but it's a similar in that you're laying out tableaus, and rather than planning events, I think it's a geography thing.
Yeah,
but I should go back and try it now.
I like this game more than I thought I would, and I think this was a fun one, and I enjoyed it quite a bit. I was very happy to play it.
All right. Why don't you cue the music?
Okay, hold on. Here it comes. Here comes everyone. Here comes the music.
You've been listening to Game Brain, produced and edited by Matthew Robinson, Tom Donnelly, Ben Mandelker, and myself, Trey Alsop. Thanks to Ed Omaros Peleg for our art. check him out at curbaloney.com. And thanks to Daedalus for our incredible music. You know them as Alfred. More on Daedalus at GameBrainPod.com. You can reach us by email at contact@GameBrainPod.com. We're on Instagram. What's our Instagram thing?
At GameBrain.
At GameBrain.
Pod, maybe? GameBrain.
Go make some friends with games.